my commentary in a moment, but first, a couple of thoughts. It has happened yet again. This time, New Jersey's most populous city, Newark, paid tribute to George Floyd recently, unveiling a 700-pound bronze statue in his honor outside City Hall. That kind of adulation has occurred in several American cities since Floyd's death. His relatives in North Carolina have found their 15 minutes of fame by riding the crest of the wave, making Floyd a hero. Liberals cannot seem to separate Floyd from the policeman serving time for Floyd's death. That policeman was convicted of the crime and was justly punished. But nothing about this makes George Floyd a hero. Floyd was a hardened criminal. He didn't just grab an old lady's handbag and run away. He abused drugs. Let me give you Floyd's rap sheet. 6 burglaries, 3 car thefts, 2 violent home invasions, 3 armed robberies, beating 4 victims senseless, passing counterfeit money, and being arrested 23 times since 1998. Yet George Floyd is being hailed as some sort of hero. Nancy Pelosi, in June 2020, gave the Floyd family a folded American flag that had flown over the Capitol on the day he died as some sort of fallen hero. Joe Biden and his vice president, Kamala Harris, met with the Floyd family on the one-year anniversary of his death, and his family has received $27 million from the state and $20 million from GoFundMe, money donated by people who consider George Floyd a hero. Black or white, ask yourself this. Would you want one of your children to turn out the way George Floyd conducted his life? We can mourn his passing, as we do for any human being, but don't erect monuments to his past. It was sordid indeed. You would think that Bill Cosby would have sense enough to stay quiet about his release from prison for the drug rape of a woman. But no, there he was, proclaiming some sort of victory. Public outrage has followed. It's important to remember that this court ruling does not mean Cosby was not guilty, that he did not commit this crime, or the several others stemming from the complaints against Cosby by several other women. He remains guilty of drugging women to have sex with them. Many people believe that Cosby got special treatment because he was a celebrity. But the technicality under which Cosby was released from prison was legitimate. It's understandable to see the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling that canceled disgraced entertainer Bill Cosby's sexual assault conviction and freed him from prison as an injustice to his accuser in the case and to the dozens of other women who told of being drugged and raped by a man once known as America's Dad. This nation and its legal system have a long history of protecting male predators in positions of power and dismissing the statements by countless women whom these men have abused, demeaned, and raped. Cosby's conviction on 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault against Andrea Constand was a breakthrough of sorts and a landmark in what became known as the Me Too movement against sexual assault and harassment. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling that freed Cosby from prison feels like an unwelcome and inappropriate exoneration of Cosby and a repudiation of Constand and the many others who say Cosby victimized them. But it's none of those things. Cosby has been exonerated of nothing. And if there is any repudiation to be found in the court's opinion, it is certainly not that of Constand. It is a rebuke instead of 2 criminal prosecutors, the one who opted against charging Cosby in 2005, in effect compelling him to testify in civil proceedings, and the one who pushed forward with criminal charges more than a decade later, despite the prior deal that enticed Cosby to testify. And yes, the court ruled there was indeed a deal, even if it wasn't documented in writing. When a prosecutor promises not to prosecute, and the accused reasonably relies on that promise to testify, despite his constitutional right not to, there is a bargain that prosecutors cannot lawfully breach. That's as it should be. Criminal prosecutors have such enormous power over people's lives and liberty that their assurances to defendants must be granted special weight, in the Pennsylvania court's words. To permit prosecutors to make promises, extract testimony or other evidence in return, and then break those promises would be an egregious and unjust exercise of governmental power against an individual, whether that person is guilty or innocent. Our nation is currently undergoing a reassessment of the enhanced powers that lawmakers granted to prosecutors over the last half century in response to their constituents' fears of rising crime. Prosecutors can be too easily tempted by the belief that protecting the public from criminal predators is worth some cheating every now and then. But if the courts look the other way, occasional cheating turns into oppression exercised by the powerful against the vulnerable. Exactly the opposite of the goal of a constitutional system of justice. It is maddening whenever a person widely believed to be guilty is released as a result of the court's catching and correcting prosecutorial excess. But it's a vastly better system than one that locks people up because those excesses go unchecked. In Bill Cosby's case, the court ruling was correct. But Cosby shows no remorse for his evil deeds against these women. He should be ashamed of himself and thankful that our system of justice freed him from prison, but he should not pretend that he is innocent of the claims against him. No sane and honest person believes that O.J. Simpson did not brutally slaughter his ex-wife and her companion, and no sane and honest person believes that Bill Cosby is innocent. The women he drugged and assaulted deserve better than that. And they certainly deserve better than a grinning sex pervert being plastered all over television taking a victory lap. Bill Cosby is not America's dad. Cosby's actions and lack of remorse represents the worst of those among us. I share credit today with Andrew Dunn in Longleaf Politics and Maria Buonino of Liberty Scholar for their research and contributions, which I will combine with my own. For years now, I've been reporting on the dishonest media in America and their deceptive tactics. It is impossible for the American people to form their own opinions when not given the truth, the complete, honest truth. But those days appear to be over. Again and again, major news outlets have been caught in outright lies. Such was the case with the debacle of the UNC Nicole Hannah-Jones manufactured outrage. First, the media concocts a narrative about how brilliant Hannah-Jones was and cited an award she had received. But remember when Barack Hussein Obama received a Nobel Prize for just a few weeks in office? The narrative of the Nicole Hannah-Jones saga that engulfed the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill was pretty straightforward. Evil Republicans on the Board of Trustees unexpectedly denied the fundamental academic right of tenure to a black female journalist because of politics and racism. But the reality is a lot more complicated. Reasonable people can disagree about whether the UNC Board of Trustees handled the matter properly. Reasonable people can even debate whether public universities should offer tenure at all. But the debate over Nicole Hannah-Jones's application for tenure was anything but reasonable. If you look closely at the timeline of events, you'll find that the entire debacle was driven more by media and faculty, hungry to drive a wedge and an agenda. And you'll find that Nicole Hannah-Jones was less than forthcoming about what she knew about the situation and when. In a statement during this time, Hannah-Jones said, quote, "I had no desire to bring turmoil or a political firestorm to the university that I love," end quote. Based on what we know now, that does not seem to be accurate. Let's piece together from numerous news accounts that have trickled out over the past few months, nearly all of them garnered to spend the most possible outrage. However, the story they paint doesn't quite fit the narrative. Please pay special attention to this timeline in order to fully understand what happened with Nicole Hannah Brown. This is based on the best possible information. In 1986, UNC hires its first Knights chair, an advertising executive named Robert Lauterborn. These positions are partially funded by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation and intended to bring professionals to the university. Lauterborn would be the first of four Knight chairs to join the faculty, and he retired in 2008. Knight Ritter journalist Phil Meyer would be hired in 1993 and also retired in 2008. New York Times executive Penny Muse Abernathy would join in 2008 and retire in 2020. In 2012, the most recent Knight chair was hired, Joanne Scarino, also an ad executive. She left for the University of Texas at Austin in 2018. Abernathy and Sciarino were offered tenure when they were hired, according to statements from UNC Journalism School faculty and from Knight chairs. In August 2019, the New York Times published the 1619 Project, an attempt to reframe American history around slavery. It's led by Nicole Hannah-Jones, whose column is titled, quote, "Our democracy's founding ideals were false when they were written. Black Americans have fought to make them true," end quote. She claimed that the American Revolution was primarily fought to preserve slavery. On March 11, 2020, after pushback from historians, the New York Times made substantial changes to the 1619 Project, including removing the assertion that our revolution was fought to preserve slavery. On May 4, 2020, Nicole Hannah-Jones won the Pulitzer Prize for commentary for the 1619 Project. In the summer of 2020, UNC began discussions with Nicole Hannah-Jones about a Knight Chair faculty position. UNC gained approval from the Knight Foundation to change its chair position to focus on race and investigative journalism. The funding agreement, which was created even before Hannah-Jones was considered, called for a 5-year contract with tenure to be considered during that time. Then, in January 2021, UNC Provost Bob Blowen included Nicole Hannah-Jones in a slate of candidates to be considered for tenure by the Board of Trustees. At least one of those trustees had some questions about the process and asked to delay her consideration. Then, on February 26, UNC sent Nicole Hannah-Jones a formal offer letter for a position at the journalism school. It was a 5-year contract that paid $180,000 per year, plus a $100,000 startup package, and $9,000 in relocation expenses. She was to teach 2 courses a semester, participate in faculty meetings, and produce journalism projects about structural racism. The offer stated that the position was not inherently tenured, but that she would be considered for tenure by the end of her five-year contract. On February 28, Nicole Hannah-Jones signed that offer. Then, on April 26, UNC announced that Nicole Hannah-Jones would be joining the journalism faculty. On May 19, the liberal publication NC Policy Watch published an article claiming that UNC did not offer Hannah-Jones tenure due to political pressure from conservatives. The liberal News and Observer, along with the Washington Post, New York Times, and other national outlets, quickly published their own versions of the same narrative. Remember, Hannah-Jones had already signed her acceptance of the terms of her contract. She knew what the terms were. On May 20, UNC students began a protest on the failure to immediately grant tenure. On May 5, the UNC Board of Trustees received a resubmitted tenure request from Hannah-Jones. Trustees received her tenure packet and resume for the first time, according to one of the trustees. On May 27, Nicole Hannah-Jones threatened legal action. She stated that receiving tenure was a condition of my employment. Again, remember, she had signed the offer when it did not offer tenure as a condition of her employment. Then on May 30th, the Assembly published a piece saying that Walter Hussman, Jr., publisher of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, who donated $25 million to have his name affixed to the School of Journalism, had emailed administrators at UNC warning them of the potential dangers of hiring Nicole Hannah-Jones. On June 21st, lawyers representing Hannah-Jones sent a lawyer to UNC to say that Hannah-Jones would not join the faculty unless she was granted immediate tenure. It was then on June 30th, UNC trustees approved Hannah-Jones's tenure application by a vote of 9-4. Having gotten what she had demanded from UNC, Nicole Hannah-Jones then announced that she would not come to UNC after all, instead deciding to join the faculty at Howard University. No one in the news media pointed out that Hannah-Jones had not been negotiating in good faith with UNC. While the trustees were considering her demand for tenure, Jones was negotiating with Howard, a predominantly black school. Jones was quoted at the time as saying that black teachers should teach at black schools. Why is that not a racist statement? Nobody is denying that the last two night chairs, Abernathy and Sciarrino, were granted tenure upon their hiring. But nobody has explained why either. Tenure is an unusual institution of debatable merit. But in most cases, professors worked toward the job security tenure for years, even a decade or more. Tenure is essentially a lifetime appointment. Why would a university grant tenure to somebody before they had taught even one single class? Put another way, why marry somebody without at least going on a few dates first? This doubtless was on the minds of the UNC trustees when they first heard Nicole Hannah-Jones's name being floated around for tenure. 9 years is a long time, and no one on the Board of Trustees at the time had been in that position the last time a night chair was hired. No board should be required to repeat the mistakes a previous board made. But set that aside for a moment. The key moment in the Nicole Hannah-Jones saga is the February offer letter from UNC. In that offer, the journalism school dean tells Hannah-Jones that the position is not tenured, but that she would be considered for tenure at some point during her 5-year contract. She was to be given a lavishly generous pay package, which would have immediately made her the highest paid professor in the journalism school, supplanting John Sweeney, who has taught at the school since 1981. 40 years he's been there, and makes $151,954. Abernathy made $175,000 in her last year at the university. That does not include the $100,000 startup bonus that was offered to Hannah-Jones. And she would have also been able to continue working for the New York Times. Nicole Hannah-Jones signed the agreement. She set a start date, knowing she likely would not have tenure by that date. Receiving tenure was thus not a condition of her employment, as she later stated. The deal was fine with her in February when she signed. It was fine in April when her appointment was announced. It was only after an activist media outlet began crafting a narrative that a problem arose. Why was none of this reported to us by the media? Because today's media operates on an agenda, ever too eager to accuse someone of racism. Keep in mind, Hannah Nicole Jones is not an obscure figure at the whims of university administrators. She is not a slave, nor was she asked to be one. She is today arguably the most famous and influential journalist in the country, more powerful than even the UNC trustees. If Hannah Jones had wanted to avoid the spotlight, she could have insisted on tenure before agreeing to join the faculty. She did not. The issue had already been raised behind the scenes. She did not have to sign the February offer. Later on, she could have diffused the situation by using her platform to tell people she was satisfied with her contract, the one she had already signed, and that she trusted the process she had agreed to would ultimately lead to her tenure. Of course, that's not what happened. Nicole Hannah-Jones knew that her appointment would be controversial and had a good idea why her tenure was not immediately approved. She was satisfied with her salary and knew that tenure would eventually be approved should she want it. But once the first story came out, she saw an opportunity to be a victim and stick it to conservatives in North Carolina. So she poured gasoline on the situation at every opportunity and made up her mind that she would not teach at UNC well in advance. Either way, the outrage was manufactured by media and faculty with political interest to maximum effect. A short delay in an arcane academic benefit was turned into a breathless national controversy, and the left enjoyed every single minute of it. I'm on record as being against tenure for any teacher. They have contracts that spell out their duties and compensation. Why should a school guarantee a teacher's job, regardless of their ineptness, dishonesty, or radical teaching? In the case of Nicole Hannah-Jones, It was not the color of her skin, but the content of her character that should have prevented tenure. The saddest part of this debacle is the fact that our liberal media betrayed us. What I've just described is the way all of this unfolded, but none of it was reported by our dishonest media. In truth, Nicole Hannah Jones snookered the UNC Board of Trustees, and they were afraid to fight back because she was a woman of color, and they are not to be challenged. The University of North Carolina is much better off without Nicole Hannah Jones. She will fit in well at Howard, where her racist agenda will go over well. As for tenure for teachers, put that in the garbage heap where it belongs. Thanks for listening today. My goal is to bring you truth where lies prevail. Now, what do you think about what I said today? It's all true. It's been well researched. You didn't hear it that way when it was all unfolding. You were told that the UNC trustees were all racists and they were just after Hannah Jones because she was a black woman. We cannot continue to go forward with a media that will not tell us the truth. All of this should have been explained to the American people as it was unfolding, but it wasn't. And so the useful idiots at the university, those students who protest the barest of anything, turned out to insist that Hannah Jones be given tenure. That's not the way it works. But anymore in today's world, that's the way it's beginning to work. I'll be back again next week, God willing. Same time, same station. I hope you will tell others about my commentaries and encourage them to tune in and learn the truth. And as always, God bless America.